Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
That's a hell of an introduction for a hell of a football player. Brian Urlacher about to join us on the McNeil and Parkin Show. Enshrinement Week is powered by Johnson Controls, and the ticket sales, well, it's been sold out for a while, but they're releasing more tickets for the public tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Central Time. It's going to be an unbelievable weekend in Canton with Urlacher and Owens and Moss and Lewis and Dawkins there. So you can get all your information at profootballhof.com/tickets. And Brian Urlacher joins us now on The Score. How's it going, Brian?
Doing well. How are you guys doing? That was a pretty nice little introduction there. A lot of years there.
I'm surprised. You know, it wouldn't be fitting if we didn't have the late Dennis Green, the crown their ass game. Because yeah. I always think of that as, and there were so many great performances you had individually and as a team against Green Bay. But for me, that's one of your defining moments. Would you agree that Monday nighter in 06?
You know what it was is that everyone saw that game. You know, it was Monday night, which helped. But in my opinion, it wasn't my best game. I think production-wise, you know, tackles-wise, I had, 25, 26 tackles. But there's a couple games in my career where I filled up other stats instead of tackles that I'm more proud of in that game.
Such as?
Atlanta 2001, Atlanta 2002, Atlanta 2011. Funny, something about the Atlanta team makes you play a little better, I guess.
Should have played in the NFC South, Urlacher.
No, played them twice a year. It'd been good.
So, Brian, obviously this is exciting for fans who weren't able to get tickets that they can get some more tomorrow morning at profootballhof.com/tickets. Are you getting excited, nervous? What are your feelings as we're approaching the event?
I'm excited about it. You know, it's such a hard thing to get ready for because you don't want to leave anybody out. So it's been stressful at times, but I'm really looking forward to the weekend so we can get it there at Canton and just, you know, go to the party, go to all the events, just have fun, and kind of enjoy what it's all about. And that's eight guys getting inducted.
So many people, and I guess I was one of them, Brian, thought that you were going to wind up asking Lovie Smith to do the enshrinement speech. You chose your defensive coordinator, Bob Babich. Was that an easy call for you, and what went into that decision?
It was not easy because I played for so many good coaches. And not just in the NFL, in high school and college as well. I also have some really good friends who could have done it. But in my opinion, it was the guy who I spent the most time with, Coach Babich, 9 years. I actually called Lovie and asked him what he thought, because he was one of my finalists. He was one of my top three. It was him, Babich, and Coach Blosch. And I called Lovie. He told me, it's Babich, do that. He goes, we're going to go watch and support you, but you need to pick Bob. And then I was hunting with Coach Blosch 2 weeks after that. He told me the same thing. So it was cool, you know, that they both said that. And then of course, Babich was very excited that I asked him.
Wow, so you were going to offer it to Lovie, but Lovie told you not to.
No. That's not what I said. I called him and asked him what he thought.
I wanted to be sure I heard it correctly.
I said, I've narrowed it down to three people, and you're one of those three. He goes, Brian, he goes, I know Bob's in the running. Bob's your guy. You spent all your time with him. He's your guy.
And how did he react when you told him that he had been chosen for the honor?
Well, he was very excited. He was humble. He goes, I'm very humbled. I'm very what's the word he used? He was driving back to Bill's facility from his mom's house in Pittsburgh. What did he say? He said he was honored and just kind of humbly said. So it was cool to have that conversation with him.
Who are you going to ask, unless you already have, to help you with your speech?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've been offered from a lot of people. I haven't gotten any help yet. You know, I actually worked on it a little bit yesterday. I've written down quite a few things that just, I don't know. I mean, there's people at the Hall of Fame who help us do that stuff. So I may have to get one of them to help me towards the end with the editing and all that stuff. Because believe it or not, I'm not very good at a lot of English grammar and stuff like that. So I need all the help I can get.
As long as it's from the heart, I don't think anybody gives a damn, Brian.
I'm with you, man. You know, I know a lot of guys get there and kind of wing it. I didn't want to do that. You know, I wanted to be prepared for it. I know what I'm going to say about everybody, and I've said this before. It's not about me that day. It's about me thanking everyone for helping me get there and honoring, in my opinion, the people who made it possible for me to get there.
So you just, like, what's the starting point? Is it a list of people to make sure you don't forget?
Yes, you hit it around the head. And I'll tell some stories, you know, about my teammates, stuff like that, about my career and my family. And then I don't plan on talking very long, honestly. I hope I'm not. You know, I hope I'm not up there very long. But I want to. I don't want to leave anybody out. But hopefully, I use my time and just hit the people I want to hit and get out of there.
So Bears fans are going to be going to Canton. Obviously, they're going to see you. Who matters a lot to you that they're there in Canton with you when you get enshrined?
Say that again. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
Well, I was wondering, you know, there's going to be a lot of Bears fans there, obviously, in attendance watching you get inducted into the Hall of Fame. Who is important to you from your career and your life that's there with you in Canton when it happens?
My teammate. I'm sorry. I'm on the golf course, so it's kind of windy. Did you say who my teammates?
I had a feeling he'd be swatting a Titleist today.
No, no worries. I was just wondering if you knew anybody that was going to actually be there in Canton with you that Bears fans would maybe be excited about. Like, who from your career is going to be in Canton when you get inducted?
Yeah. Oh, my God. The Bears play in the Hall of Fame game, obviously, so there should be a lot of Bears, you know, staff there. And hopefully they can all stick around for Saturday for the induction. I was actually at House Hall last week for a couple hours and talked to everyone, tried to get, you know, the feel of who I was going to be coming. So I feel like there's going to be a good turnout from the Bears organization there.
Did you get a chance while you were there, Brian, to talk with Matt Nagy and his new assistants? And what do you think of the direction they're going?
I did talk to Coach Nick. Unbelievable. I'm so excited for the – I mean, you walk into that building, everyone just has so much praise for him and, more importantly, the quarterback. You know, they're all talking high about Mitch, who I'm a big fan of as well. So it was fun to kind of be excited about what, the direction they're going again, because everyone's, you know, a proud nine with, you know, Roquan Big draft in the first round, a good player. Everyone's excited.
Have you met or spoken with Roquan Smith yet?
No, I have not.
Because it's a lot of pressure on that kid. I mean, he gets drafted by the Bears, and he's being asked and compared to guys like you.
There's no compare. I mean, the same thing happened to me. In your first couple of years, man, all you can do is just kind of embrace the history of the tradition of no linebackers. And you got to be you, though, you know, because we're all different players. I wasn't like Buckus. I wasn't like Singletary. Neither one of them were like me. So he has to be him and just do what he does best. And I think that alone will get him make a lot of plays for the Bears.
Danny, I think one of the things that endeared Brian to the fan base here early in his career and to teammates was how deferential he was when he arrived to the history of the position, going back to Bill George before Butkus and then to Singletary. We did an event at the other station, Decades of Dominance, and Brian had only played 2 years. And we're off stage beforehand, and Brian says to Yurko and me, I got no business being with these guys. And then a couple months ago when David Hall and I interviewed our guest right now, Brian Urlacher, he said he didn't feel like he belonged until the day he got the call.
Wow.
And that's all true. You know, I didn't feel, especially early on, you know, I just didn't feel like I'd prove anything, especially to be in the category of those two or even Bill George. You know, I didn't feel like I had proved much. And then obviously now I feel like I belong, you know, what's transpired the last few months here, but you know, early on, you just can't put yourself in that category. I mean, you can obviously strive to be where they're at, but I didn't feel like I belonged in that in their conversation for a few years there.
So what type of advice, if he asked, would you give Roquan Smith?
Play hard. Play fast. I mean, he's a good football player. I would not give him – I mean, he's the reason he got drafted number 8 in the first round, because he's a good football player. He's smart. He runs fast. He tackles good. What more do you want from a guy? You know, just keep doing what you're doing, what got you there, and then have fun doing it.
There's going to be a few more tickets released tomorrow to see Brian inducted into the Hall of Fame. ProFootballHOF.com/tickets, 9 a.m. local time tomorrow. How are you hitting them out there on the golf course today, Brian?
I'm okay. It's kind of just, right now the wind's picking up a little bit, so that will be another challenge for me. But you know the weather, it's 95 degrees today, so it's not bad. Can't complain.
95 degrees and windy. That's a swing hard proposition, man.
No, swing easy when it's breezy, Dan. You know that.
Oh, you can't do that. You gotta swing as hard as you can.
Hey, Brian, before we let you go, but before we let you go, I was wondering if you saw this story. Danica Patrick is dating Aaron Rodgers, and Danica Patrick apparently is a Bears fan. Upon meeting Aaron Rodgers, her father said that Mr. Patrick wanted to tackle Aaron Rodgers wearing your jersey.
I saw that. That's funny. My wife listened to it yesterday. I got a good laugh out of it.
Okay.
Brian, what are you going to do with yourself other than playing golf and gracing the tri-state with all the Restore ads? What are you going to do with your life? Have you decided yet?
Well, I got three kids, you know. I got 17, 13, and 12-year-olds, so they keep me pretty busy. I'm a professional Uber driver that doesn't get paid for my little ones. So I do that most of the time. And when they're at school, I play golf, work out, and ride my bike. So I do okay. I'm doing okay with my time.
Decent. Well, enjoy your summer and everything leading up to Canton. You absolutely have earned it, man.
All right, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Brian Urlacher. Thank you very much for calling in from the golf course. ProFootballHOF.com/tickets. The 2018 Enshrinement Week is powered by Johnson Controls, and ticket sales reopen tomorrow for the public at 9 a.m. local time.
Park, see, one of the things that I would love to see the radio station do sometime down the road, and I'm sure it will, is resurrect the Scores charity golf outing. And when Brian played in it his rookie year, what he said with the people from the station who were coordinating the thing, he said, I want to ride with Doug Buffone. I want to spend the afternoon talking to a guy who played linebacker for this team for 14 years so I understand what type of a situation, what type of legacy I'm following. And I think that was among the men. You could talk about all the things he did on the field. That's easy to watch highlights. But so many things he did away from that, especially the first 5 years of his career, really was what partly for me made him so special.
It's an easy player to root for, right? I mean, he played hard.
He had hiccups along the way.
Sure.
And he knows it.
Yeah,
it's part of the process.
Yeah, it was a perfect fit for the fan base and the history and the tradition and the type of team that they were with Lovey and taking the ball away. It was for all of that stuff about, you know, Chicago tough and grit and blue collar and all that, like he embodied it for the vast majority of his career. Sure, there were some hiccups along the way, but for the most part, he was a very easy guy to root for.
Do you think he really called Jay Cutler that five-letter word that we were told he called him? Who was it, Bobby Wade, who said that in a Minnesota radio station interview? I kind of think he did.
We should have asked him.
I know. Why didn't I think of that minutes ago?
I don't know.
Not like we didn't have time.
Yeah. I mean, can you hear me now, Brian? Can you hear me
that
now?
That happens in windy Maricopa County, Arizona.
Yeah. Texters write in, did he just say he's an Uber driver? Yes, he was being sarcastic.
Yeah, he's taking his kids to school.
Yes. Hey, I asked him last time that I had him on. You had him on with Hall when he was filling in, you know, if he would want to get into coaching. I said, no, he doesn't want to do it. I wouldn't either. Made plenty of money. It's a lot of work. You know, he's golfing. He's got his business ventures.
Yes.
He's got plenty of money. He's got a family with young kids. I am always surprised by the competition-aholics who can't really break away from it. I'm like, man, if I was you in your situation and put in what you did, I would want to get away from it all.
Yeah, and the game has changed for the better for guys who do want to go into coaching. The hours remain ridiculously long. The pressure is enormous. But positional coaches now get handsomely paid. A lot of guys who I used to run with, my group from the 80s, guys my age, they wanted nothing to do with it, partly because it paid internship-type money when you'd been used to earning NFL paychecks.
Yeah, but the hours are just insane for football coaches.
Yes.
100-hour work weeks.
Most of them think you have to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning and leave at midnight. How'd that work for Jim Haslett down in New Orleans?
Well, right, work smarter, not harder, but they all do it.
Most of them.
I would love to know the example of the head coach that's working a normal 9-to-5.
Well, he's not. He doesn't coach the Redskins anymore. But Steve Spurrier was the one. Would they call him Sticks?
Yeah.
For his golf clubs,
right? But
Sticks Spurrier. That's a great nickname for a coach, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible, and it works in college when you can just recruit all the better talent in the world
right.
And then go play 36 holes. But I mean, in the NFL. the guy's like, oh, yeah, I played 18 holes before I came out for practice. People are like, what? Not exactly the NFL lifestyle. Sox prospects and their future with Chris Getz coming up at 2:40. Come on out and see us. It's McNeil and Parkins at Coombs Corner in Lockport. The World Series trophy is coming in just a little under now, 2 hours. This segment brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. We're McNeil and Parkins on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
El Caballo. How about that?
That's 17 years ago, and apparently the scars are still fresh for our executive producer, because as he hears the Hawk Harrelson highlight, he begins to make a very obscene gesture. He's not happy. That was one of my favorites. That was I think, a Friday night game in 0-1. And was it extra innings, or was that a bottom of the ninth shot?
It's 10th, right?
I think it was bottom of the 10th. I know exactly where I was. I was in the dorms at Illinois State basketball camp watching with all my jerkhole Sox fan friends when that happened. And that, like, just who I was watching with is why it touched a nerve so much.
Is that right?
Yes. Wow. I know exactly where I was when that happened.
Oh, that's not natural, man. Like, personal experiences of otherwise meaningless,
like,
sporting events.
One other Cubs fan and a dozen Sox fans just laughing in your face.
I watched it from the ballpark formerly known as U.S. Cellular Field. And I'll be on the north side tomorrow afternoon. The midday show is broadcasting from Gallagher's Way. Or is it Gallagher Way?
Gallagher.
Gallagher Way. I've seen it. I haven't been there yet. I'm going to try to stop by. May be forced to. Because weather may force some of the activities indoors tomorrow morning.
Well, then you got to be on standby to host the full boat tomorrow.
Yes, that's exactly what I am. I am flying standby tomorrow.
Flying.
You enjoy a much-deserved 3-day weekend.
Oh, thank you. You're too kind. I'm bummed to miss Cubs Sox, man. I really am. It's, in terms of meaningless sporting events, I enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, there's another one coming in September.
Yes.
And by then, the White Sox should have eclipsed the three-digit setback number.
Yeah, the Cubs could give them their 100th loss in theory if the Sox pick it up a little bit. At this point they're on pace for a solid 115 or so.
Yeah.
So they need to get a little bit better there. Just to circle back around, I know we're going to talk some Sox with Chris Getz at 2:40, and we've got Brent Musburger on the show at 3. This segment, by the way, brought to you by Townstone Financial, your number one home mortgage lender since 2002. When we said, like, who the next bear to make it into the Hall of Fame is, the texters were coming in hot with a bunch of different names.
You want to shoot them down one by one?
Well, I mean, I just won't count Julius Peppers as a bear. You know what I mean? Like, that's not why he's going in to the Hall of Fame. Great signing, and it worked, and an all-time player and all
that. 4 or 5 pretty productive years for the most part.
Yeah, but I don't think people will think of him as going in as a bear when he goes in, right? He's a Panther.
He's a Panther.
And so, but I do think Julius Peppers will make the Hall of Fame.
Yes, he likely will.
Unbelievable.
Even though he never eclipsed a 15-sack season.
But just the prolonged dominance that he had.
Well, in the athleticism. I mean, when I think of the play he made, oddly enough, at Carolina, when he batted a Jimmy Clausen pass and got up from, sprang up from his knees, fully extended and made the interception. To me, that's his signature moment in a Bears uniform.
I agree completely. And the story of how they signed him and going to his house at the right when free agency started and identifying him and how big the contract was, and it blew us all away. Oh, my God, the Bears were willing to spend that kind of money, and then it worked.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, there was a lot there. He had a great run with the Bears. Just I wasn't thinking of him when we were talking about Bears Hall of Famers. Then a lot of people threw Olin Krutz at us. And to me, he's like Briggs and Peanut. Hall of very good.
I'm there also with him.
It's so damn hard to make the Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Because of how the voting works. And that's cool. I think it makes it an exclusive, like, exclusivity makes it really special. But I don't think Olin Krutz gets it.
What did Olin, not that it's everything, but what did he make? 7 Pro Bowls-ish, which is the same number Jay Hilgenberg at the same position played in many years ago. I don't think Tillman is even... Maybe he'll be one of the guys people vote on in a few years. And we do think of him more as a Bear than a Panther. Charles Tillman, he was a Bear. I don't want to say the name. Member of our air staff, because I might be wrong. I might be confusing two of them. Somebody from the air staff who is known as a football guy. I'll check during the break and see if it was who I think it is. suggested Peanut has a good chance of getting there. I don't agree.
Well, a lot of people, I mean, very popular. Had like the turnover numbers are there, obviously, and people argue for Hall of Fame candidacy a lot on did they change the game. And with the Peanut Punch, him kind of getting credited for the ball punch and forcing fumbles from that position, if you really wanted to go there and say that that changed the game, that would help his candidacy.
Yeah.
And the Man of the Year stuff, and you know what I mean? Like, he has that side of it also, which I don't know how much that will help, but it is kind of a popularity contest. There's a lot of politicking that goes into the Hall of Fame.
No doubt, especially when you have such a small panel deciding on this. I think it might... I think it works more against a guy getting into the Hall if he's got character question marks than it works for a guy if he's a good citizen. I'm convinced that's the reason Terrell Owens should have been in his first year. The fact that he had some off-the-field issues and didn't get along always with people who asked the questions of him, I think that hurt him getting in his first year of eligibility.
Peanut Tillman only made the Pro Bowl twice, first-team All-Pro once. But, yes, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award in 2013, mm-hmm. but the turnover numbers are pretty remarkable. Like, I don't have an all-time list. I just pulled up his Wikipedia page. I can look it up during the break if people want it.
FFs?
44 of them. From that position, that is
that's significant.
That is a monster number.
Yeah, Eddie Jackson's only got 41 more to go, I think.
You know, so when you just look at that, so 38 interceptions and 44 forced fumbles. So that's contributing to, now obviously they don't recover every fumble that he forced. He only recovered 9 fumbles and had 9 defensive touchdowns. But the potential for 82 turnovers, sorry, Tanny. Couldn't get you the one more. Really, really, Charles Tillman should be the one apologizing. But 38 plus 44, I can't change the math.
Yeah, they gave it to Urlacher.
Yeah, exactly. It's the 82. It's just that's the number, right? We would talk about Charles Tillman and his candidacy for the 44 forced fumbles from the cornerback position.
Something Tillman said 7 or 8 years ago, it was right around the time when the Bears were just winning ugly by way of turnovers, when they had really bad quarterbacks. And this is during a period when Cutler was hurt. Tillman's talking about the ball punch. I believe it. I speak it. I practice it. It happens. That's in the Hall of Fame for locker room billboards.
Yeah.
But he doesn't belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Right. And, like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not a slight to any of these guys, actually.
It's a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and it's a pretty exclusive one. Like, everybody gets in the Basketball Hall of Fame. It's really easy to get in the back.
Right.
Carmelo Anthony is a mortal lock for the Basketball Hall of Fame. Chris Bosh is a virtual certainty to make the Basketball Hall of Fame. And those are not guys that you think of as, you know, instantly no question about it, but that's just kind of how the Basketball Hall of Fame works. Football and baseball, much more exclusive to get in.
And those of you who are chiming in repeatedly with Hester, we covered that about 35 minutes ago. We think if it happens, it's a long way down the road.
Yeah, and I think I'm more bullish on his chances than you are. Because the Hall of Fame, sometimes they just find the year and they find the class, and it's like, we're overdue here. Like, we're right, there are not enough defensive players in the Hall of Fame.
Well, in Hester's case, there's like no one in front of him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, like, at some point, that's going to become an in vogue conversation, especially with what's going on in the NFL. And, like, he has records that will never be broken.
Especially if they get rid of kickoffs.
That's what I'm saying. Like, because they're making it harder to have any sort of impact in the return game. So, Devin Hester, I think there will be a time 10, 15 years from now, and special teams' value for touchdowns has been nullified to the point where, like, well, so who was the best to ever do that? Oh, Devin Hester. Oh, he should be in the Hall of Fame. So, I could see him getting in when he's, like, 50 or 60 years old, you know, and so people have an appreciation with history for the numbers.
26 years from now, you'll be hosting Afternoons on the Score with some 31-year-old guy, and you'll be explaining to him how special Hester was back in that era when the NFL used to have teams kick off after touchdowns and field goals and at the beginning of halves.
Honestly, he might be my favorite Bear ever. Like, he's just so damn fun and exciting, and they've never had, like, a player.
Wow.
Like, he was just so electrifying. When he was standing back there, and you didn't feel like they could have big plays on offense. And I like offense, and I like that type of thing.
Rex was their quarterback.
You know what I mean? And so it's just like, Devin Hester felt special, and the Bears have never in my lifetime had another player anywhere near that. running back, wide receiver, or anything
Your
like that.
Your favorite Bear of all time is
the
a guy
whose
college coaches couldn't find a position for him because he wasn't smart enough to remember hot colors.
That doesn't bother me at all. Just like on the field, right. Who was the most exciting player to watch in my lifetime for the Bears? The answer is Devin Hester.
Certainly 6-7 times a game, which is all a receiver really affects a game for the most part.
And they didn't really score otherwise. We'll talk to Chris Getz coming up and then Brent Musburger after that on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
2009, Cubs Sox, Chris Getz steals home on Carlos Zambrano. And now Chris Getz is the director of player development for the Chicago White Sox, oversees the minor leagues, and that's really where the excitement is with Cubs and Sox starting up tomorrow. It's about the future for the White Sox. We'll talk about that with Chris in just a minute as we welcome him into McNeil and Parkins. Chris, thank you very much for the time. I assume that that's got to be your personal favorite memory of Cubs Sox stealing home there.
That was definitely a special one. Well, look at you guys going into the archives there. I like it.
Yeah,
well,
sometimes the archives beat the present, at least in terms of the big club, and we'll get some of your thoughts on the guys who are going to be here down the road in a few minutes, but just hearing highlights that involve Carlos Zambrano tickle me. I had a conversation over the weekend with a buddy, Chris, and I didn't think we'd discuss this on the air, that Carlos Zambrano's agent missed the boat. He should have been an American League player, where he could have DH'd a couple of days a week.
Oh, modern-day Ohtani?
Yeah, that sucker could hit, and he was exciting, even when he had a pitch-out called and he couldn't hit the mitt.
Yeah, he definitely had some good moments on the mound and certainly in the box. Yeah, he was fun to watch. But, I remember that play distinctly. I think it was I don't want to say a failed suicide squeeze, but because I think I took off too early that he then – airmailed, the catcher trying to hit the batter. Then, as a result, I got a stolen base, stealing home, which is very unique. But that was a fun one.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how it works out, as long as it works out. We're talking to Chris Getz, director of player development for the White Sox. So there are so many positive things that you're overseeing. So I want to just get the negative one out of the way. Can you tell White Sox fans how big of a setback, if you would characterize it as that, as this is for Jake Berger re-tearing his Achilles tendon?
I mean, we're certainly all disappointed. We know that Jake is the most disappointing out of this whole thing. I mean, he's such a great kid. He's been working his butt off, towards getting back on the field. Now, I think the silver lining, if there is one, is that it happened now, only 2 months into it. Certainly this will reset the timeline a bit, but it's unfortunate, but there's nothing we can do about it at this point, and we'll just, now that the surgery's behind us, we'll just get right into the rehab with him and move forward.
Chris, was there any precursor leading up to the re-injury? Was there any reason to suspect he wasn't healing well?
No, there were no signs. I've certainly been digging as far, as much as I can, just because of the frustration of the whole thing. But, with a surgery like that, dealing with the Achilles, you're always running the risk of a recurrence, although it's a small one, and it just so happened. But, there were no signs. He wasn't complaining of anything. There were no, there was nothing that told us that. That this was coming, so it was a shock. But this is part of baseball, unfortunately, part of just recovery process in general. But these are the cards that were dealt, and we'll just deal with them.
Chris Getz, director of player development for the White Sox, is our guest. 9 straight days with multiple hits for Eloy Jimenez, who is obviously back in the forefront with Cubs and Sox playing each other this weekend. Rick Hahn was quoted yesterday as saying that he might be pushing you guys to reevaluate the timetable for a promotion. Where are you on that in terms of his major league readiness?
Well, I have to say he's done nothing but hit since he's been a White Sox. First game I saw him play, I believe he had 5 hits, 2 of which were home runs, and he's just continued to do so. You know, early on, he obviously got a late start to the season with a spring training injury, and he was it was the first time I'd ever seen him scuffle at all, and it was only for 10 at-bats or so. But he's certainly back to being Eloy Jimenez, and, you know, he's hitting for power, he's using the whole field. It's been a very impressive start to the season. In terms of a timeline, you know, it's tough to tell, but he's obviously in a really good spot right now. He's showing the ability to perform at Double-A, and we'll see what happens next. But we're starting to have some discussions on, you know, when the next step, when to take the next step to Charlotte, and then we'll, once we're there, then we'll talk about Chicago.
The dude clearly can hit. How would you characterize his growth as a player defensively, Chris?
You know, he's got good instincts, which is not surprising just because of his feel for hitting. When he's out there, you know, he's not a plus-plus runner by any stretch, but he gets good reads off the bat. He's got a pretty good arm, too. He's just a smart baseball player, well-rounded. You know, obviously the bat and the power, the carrying tools, but he's not anything to worry about in the outfield. But the gift is with the bat. But he definitely can cover some ground with his size. He doesn't stand out in a negative way at all defensively. So it's been good to see. He's coming along.
Who would you compare him to?
You know what? I people ask me that all the time, and I hate to put unnecessary expectations, but he's got a chance to be just a high impact type player. I mean, he can just do a lot of things. He can impact the game in a lot of different ways. And I know the Chicago fans are going to be excited to watch this.
Chris, come on, give us a name. If
Joe
Maddon can, yeah, no, Joe Madden's talking about Javi Baez as Manny Ramirez. Throw a name at us. Humor us today.
Yeah, I think that's a little irresponsible. I'd love to do that for you, but yeah, just not today.
Well, you know, it's actually funny that, Mac, that you mentioned Manny Ramirez. Omar Vizquel comped Micah Adolfo to Manny Ramirez. Now, Chris, what's going on here with all of these Manny Ramirez comps that are being thrown around? He's one of the best hitters I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'll take it. I think we'll all take Manny Ramirez. Micah is off to a great start. He had a really good season last year. You know, there was a lot of production, kind of for the first time, for the most part, to be he was the most consistent he's at least been. He's taken into this year, and I think he's really feeding off what's going on in Winston-Salem. There's some players there that have also been producing, and they're feeding off each other. Omar has done a phenomenal job in creating a great work environment. Those guys are having a blast each and every day, coming to the ballpark and getting their work in, and obviously it's showing on the field.
Who is the guys? We're talking to Chris Getz, Director of Player Development for the White Sox. He oversees the minor leagues, which is where the action is for the White Sox right now. Who is the player that we are not giving enough attention to that you feel like one day could make a significant impact, at whatever type of impact, but a significant one for the Major League club?
We've got a reliever in Double-A, Ian Hamilton. I think that's really turning some heads. I think he's got a chance to really help shorten some ball games. You know, I'd say he's the one that stands out probably the most. It's always tough because, you know, obviously my day-to-day is working in the minor league, so I'm familiar with everybody. I'm not so, you know, I can't keep up with everyone, how everyone else views our organization. But I think he's a guy that's not asked about much when maybe they should.
So in terms of the strength of the organization, there's so many different pitching prospects that I'm always reading about. But, you know, you talk to experts, you talk to other front office people, and they'll say, you know, a position player is easier to project than a pitching prospect for some obvious reasons and some less obvious. What system do you have in place that makes you confident that so much of this rebuild is depending on pitching prospects that have a high flame-out rate, that you're going to be above the curve on that, and whatever the number is, whether it's 25%, 40%, whatever it is, that you're going to have a high enough success rate with your pitching prospects to translate to major league success?
Well, I think we've you know, Rick, Kenny, they've done a nice job in terms of, you know, who they've been able to acquire, whether it be, you know, in trades internationally or in the draft here. And, you know, now in terms of systems that we have in place for sustainable success, you know, we've obviously historically we've done pretty well in developing pitching. We've got a lot of continuity here, a good understanding of what it takes for these guys to pitch at the major league level. You know, I think we've got a pretty good understanding of some of the new technologies that are out there that help kind of enhance and have an understanding of each and everyone's skill set. You know, but that goes for all areas of our development, even on the position player front. We've really individualized our plans. The players are very involved in their own development. There's been a lot of buy-in. So it's just been fun to kind of watch the growth here, and we'll just continue to do that so we can, you know, continue to help the Major League club and supplement what we have going on, just because it's important. Because, you know, realistically, there's going to be some players that don't quite reach their potential, or there's going to be some injuries along the way, and it's our job on the PD side to continue to supply what the Major League club needs.
What is Michael Kopech doing right now specifically, Chris, to get himself ready for that jump once it comes?
You know, the focus has really been on the third pitch, the changeup. He's got a pretty good changeup. He's getting more comfortable with it. You know, it's the challenging thing is that he's at the AAA level, and because he's obviously got a powerful arm, he's got a powerful slide, he's got a fastball and a slider at high velocity, the changeup at times at AAA just gives hitters an opportunity to catch up to the ball. With that being said, he's got to throw it, and we certainly want him to learn and get comfortable with it at AAA versus getting to the major leagues and learning it up there. So that's been the focus at this point. He's done a nice job. Obviously at AAA, he's racking up a lot of strikeouts. He's taking the ball every fifth day, and you know he's got the weapons to be an impact type pitcher for sure.
I want to make an entry for dumbest question asked of the week, and that's you know that's high territory here on the Score, because we ask a lot of dopey questions during the week. But at the big league level, Chris, and I watch the White Sox regularly. I hope you don't take offense, but I need Major League Baseball. I don't really watch much minor league ball. When I see, and I know there's growing pains, but when I see guys making outs, at making the third out of an inning at third base, or Tuesday night, Daniel Palka not calling off his second baseman, not opening his mouth, clearly should have, I got it. How does that happen at the big league level? We learn this when we're 10.
Well, you know, unfortunately, things like that continually happen at the major league level. The teams that do it less are going to have more success. It's my job, along with others on the PD side, to avoid those type of scenarios. Unfortunately, we've been seeing a handful of those things unfold at the major league level. But, you know, it's a frustrating thing to watch. You know, going back to when I was playing on good teams and bad teams, it seemed to happen more often on the bad teams. But these are just kind of the growing pains for a lot of these guys. You know, playing on the stage for the first time sometimes can bring out some negative things along with some positives. And you certainly brought up a handful of those things. But making the first or third out at third base is not fundamental baseball. And then calling off, you know, figuring out who the priority guys in the outfield and communicating properly. Those are things that just have to happen to have success at the major league level.
Well, Chris, Sox fans are excited for the guys that you're overseeing to get there to the major league level. And thank you very much for the time and the insight. He's the director of player development for the White Sox, Chris Getz. Thank you, Chris.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Enjoyed it, Chris. Thank you. You too. Have a good weekend.
That's Chris Getz with us on McNeil and Parkins, brought to you by Neumail Medical Center. Discover the new you, neumailmedical.com. I was reading just in prepping for it, like just different conversations that Rick Hahn and him have had with different members of the media. They won't do the timetable thing, because the question that every Sox fan wants to know is,
right,
when is Eloy coming up? When is Kopech coming up? You know, like the biggest names. And he's just, he's got an interesting job. Like, guys like him are so damn important to whether or not this is all going to work, because the vast majority of their resources are with the minor league club right now, as evidenced by the record of the major league club.
Yeah, there's no percentage in them giving dates anyway. I mean,
it'll change.
Yeah, well, we'll be here when they arrive. When Michael Kopech finally throws a pitch in anger on the south side, we'll be around.
Yep. Earliest, I would guess, July.
I would think so.
Latest, a standard September call-up.
Yeah.
But that range, when you're dealing with a 100-loss season, not too big of a deal when you're talking about the big picture of the White Sox.
So what do you think? 1 to 10, a scale of dumbness. My question about why do things like that happen at the major league level. Give me high marks or no?
Six.
It was a pretty dumb question.
Yeah, but at least you knew it going in.
How does that happen? Just like Connor did with Ron Majors. He knew it going in.
Yeah.
Of course, we cut that part out of the soundbite. It makes it less special.
Yeah, right, exactly. Your acknowledgement of stupidity on the front end will be taken away in the future. Story time and some gambling with Brent Musburger coming up next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.